Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and as promised, we have some special music today coming to you live from our Buck studio. We have violinist Naha Greenholz and her pianist, Jeannie Yu, and they are going to be playing three movements from one of the most distinctive and famous of all violin sonatas. Naha Greenholz is the... Say that.
Hi, Norman.
Oh, hi. Hi. That is Naha, and that's Jeannie over there. And the page turner will be Kyle. Is it Greenholz?
Knox.
Oh, that's right. Okay. That's the other half, though. That would be the husband of our violinist today. And welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Welcome to our studio. Look forward to some music. I'm intrigued a little bit about your biography, though, Naha. You're born in Kyoto, and you lived there for your first 10 years?
I was actually back and forth between Japan and Canada in my early years. My father was a diplomat for a few years, and so we lived in Japan until I was about 5 years old, and then we moved to Canada for his training, and then his first posting was in Japan, so we moved back again. And then his next job took him to Vancouver, so of course the family followed him to beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia.
And I'm guessing that somehow, I'm just guessing that you started playing the violin at a very early age, you know, five.
I did,
or
yes,
like
even younger. I wasn't yet three when I went to my first violin lessons. My sister, who's a couple of years older than me, started taking lessons, and of course, you know, I wanted to join in the fun and go along with her to the lessons. So I started with the Suzuki method, which involves coming with your cardboard box and learning how to bow. Those are the first couple of months of lessons. So I did start early.
Learning how to bow?
That's very important in the method.
that's not just a Japanese convention, or is it?
I think they're tied together because Shinichi Suzuki developed his method in Japan. But yes, deference to your teacher is very important. So.
So you have to learn to bow while you learn to bow.
That's right. Exactly.
What was musical life like in Japan? Is there a way to compare it with, say, in Vancouver after that? Is there any kind of a difference? Was there a difference as far as you could tell at such an early age?
Well, when I lived in Tokyo, the classical music and actually also the jazz scene is so vibrant in the major cities in Japan. Tokyo itself has several professional orchestras, and so I was often able to go to Suntory Hall and enjoy concerts. One of my first teachers was one of the concertmasters of major orchestra in Tokyo, so often went to performances there. And then when I moved to Vancouver, I often enjoyed performances with the Vancouver Symphony, and one of my middle school teachers was one of the concertmasters there as well. So I've always been lucky to be in big cities where I was able to have access to great performances and great teachers.
But it strikes me as being unusual, this ambition, this early ambition of yours to be specifically a concertmaster. Have you encountered anyone else in your studies or your travels who grew up wanting to be a concertmaster?
Well, the orchestra player path is, for string players, something I think that develops, at least in my generation. I mean, I'm still pretty young, but my peers and I, we went to school, you know, not really thinking that we were going to do orchestra. I mean, we kind of knew that we weren't going to be big soloists or recitalists, but, we just kind of went to conservatory and thought maybe we'd play in chamber groups. But most string players do end up playing in orchestra, and I was able to play concertmaster of my youth orchestra when I was young, growing up in Vancouver Symphony, and of a small professional orchestra also in high school when I was there. So I was always interested in sitting in the chair. And when I left Juilliard, actually, is when I started thinking about it seriously, when I got my first job as associate concertmaster of the Louisiana Philharmonic, which is a position where I had the the privilege of being able to sit in the first chair a lot during that year. And I really enjoyed myself, and I knew that this is what I wanted to do.
And so, just for the record, what does a concertmaster do? There's a lot of it that is, as they say, invisible to the audience, isn't there?
Absolutely. There's a large component of the duties that take place during the rehearsal process. Trying to make things go smoothly as possible is the most basic way to explain it, to maximize efficiency by helping the conductor, interpret their musical ideas to the section, and to try to help ensemble issues by making comments to the section, even standing up and demonstrating. But even before the rehearsal process, a lot of the work is done at home, just looking at the music, looking at scores, listening to recordings, and coming up with my own feeling of what the bowings should be and what strings we should be playing on, and kind of indicating that in the parts. And then that's passed to the viola section, the second violin section, and the bass section, cello section, and their markings are kind of based off of what I mark into my part.
So this is a leadership position?
It is, yes.
Has anyone ever, challenge your decisions? I mean, I realize you've only been in this job for
this
a few months now.
Confidential information.
That's right.
Of course, being a young person in a leadership position comes with its challenges, but Madison Symphony has just been an absolute delight to work with, and I get along with every one of my colleagues, and I'm really lucky to be here.
Well, the product certainly has been the proof of that, hasn't it? Some wonderful performances by the Madison Symphony.
Absolutely, thank you.
With their new concertmaster, who is performing here in our studio, or will be very shortly, Naha Greenholz. What about this sonata? You're about to play three of the four movements. We'll hear them one at a time without running straight through from one to the next. What about this Franck violin sonata do you find attractive?
Well, this is one of my absolute favorite works to perform. It's such a satisfying series of movements. Unfortunately, we won't play the meat and potatoes of it, which is the second movement today, but the opening movement is absolutely lyrical and lovely, and some say it's kind of a prolonged introduction to the second movement, but I think it stands on its own as just a really beautiful kind of strolling music.
It's beautiful, and yet it's kind of cutting edge in a way, too. It has a kind of a bluesy quality almost.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
So here's the first movement of the Franck Violin Sonata in A. First movement of the Violin Sonata in A by César Franck, as performed right here in our Buck studio this afternoon by my guest, Naha Greenholz, and her pianist, Jeannie Yu. One of the things that I always like to mention when I hear that sonata, or that always comes to my mind, Naha, is the first performance. César Franck was the pianist for the occasion, and I believe Eugenie Zai was the violinist. I think it's dedicated to him, isn't it?
That's correct.
And they first performed it at a Brussels Art Museum in December. It would have been about 1886 or so, somewhere in there. And back in the days before electric lights were, very common in museums, let's put it that way. And nobody has thought to consider that, in December in Belgium, it gets dark pretty early. And so they start to play this thing, and it's too dark to see the notes on the page. And finally, one of the two, I can't remember if it was Isai or Franck, said, let's just keep playing. And they play the rest of it from memory in the dark. Which, fortunately, we don't have to do today.
Right. Interestingly, I think, actually, that was the first public performance, but the first private performance was at Izai's wedding. I believe it was...
Was it a wedding present for him?
Frank's wedding present to him, to the 31-year-old violinist. So
it has all kinds of glow to it.
Absolutely.
What about this third movement that we're going to skip to?
Well, it's called a recitativo fantasia, and it's interesting grouping because these two things are kind of opposite, musically speaking. I mean, a recit takes you from one place to another in the fastest possible way. In an opera, it's used to, you know, advance the plot between the times when the singers are, you know, going on and on about something or another. And the fantasia is kind of, well, like it says, a riff on a theme for to develop it. So it's a very interesting movement.
All right, so this is the third movement, then, of the Franck Violin Sonata in A. Third movement of the Violin Sonata in A by César Franck, full of intensity, no doubt about that. A question for our pianist today. Jeannie, you are going to be heading back to Milwaukee pretty soon before even the hour is over for rehearsal. And so what is your part in musical life in Milwaukee?
I'm a freelancing pianist. And I collaborate with many Milwaukee Symphony members and students at UWM. And I even sometimes play a concerto, which happened yesterday. I played Rachmaninoff Rhapsody on a theme of Paganini with the Milwaukee Youth Symphony Orchestra.
Real crowd pleaser.
Yes.
but a pretty, not exactly a pushover for the pianist, is it?
Oh, no.
18 variations.
There are 150 kids in this orchestra, and I think I just about killed myself trying to play out enough.
So
if I sound a little tired today, that might be the reason.
That 150 kids in the orchestra.
Yes.
And just one pianist.
One piano.
Now, what about this Franck sonata? So often the case, I mean, with the Beethoven sonatas, for example, violin, we call them violin sonatas. Mm-hmm. But it's obviously violin and piano.
Yes.
And how equal a part, in your opinion, does the piano have in a sonata like this Franck that we're hearing today?
Oh, I always say the piano part's harder.
Especially if it's the violinist playing it.
Franck's piano parts in general are difficult for pianists with small hands, such as myself. And so a lot of rolling has to happen. So these big chords, you'll notice that I roll quite a few of them and try to make them sound as musical as possible and get the timings right for the violinist to come in. And yeah.
Well, the rolling seems to me was a popular thing in the 19th century anyway,
yes.
Wasn't it? So it fits the time.
Right. But such delicious harmonies in this sonata. It's just really fun to play.
What about the last movement? We'll get into that pretty quickly. What stands out for either of you there?
Well, the last movement starts in a canon form, so you'll hear the piano play a couple bars, and then I'll play the same thing, and that goes on for a little while. And then in the second section, you'll hear a theme from the movement that we just played, the very slow theme. It'll be played as a melody in the piano part and with a much lighter touch and a fanciful violin line. So he brings back themes from earlier movements. That's one of his signature composing traits. And it's a very lighthearted and beautiful movement.
the finale of the Franck Violin Sonata in A. Bravo. There you have the final movement, the fourth and final movement of César Franck's Violin Sonata in A, as played live in our Buck studio by Naha Greenholz. She's the new concertmaster of the Madison Symphony, and her pianist is Jeannie Yu. Naha Yu, as the concertmaster, well, first of all, explain us what happens if we're sitting in a concert hall. You know, a hush falls over the crowd. The orchestra is there.
Then no, turn off your cell phone. Yeah. Announcement comes on. Yes.
Important point there. Yes. And then what's the sequence of events at the beginning of a concert?
Well, then I'll walk out onto the stage and I'll indicate to our principal oboist, Mark, to give an A, and he'll tune the wind section and then the string section, so we're all, you know, on the same page in terms of our tuning. And then I'll sit down and stand up again when John Demain walks on stage.
So you often get, you actually get applause, don't you, as the concertmaster, because you're the first one in. The concert's about to start.
That's right.
So
it's
you
a nice
get
welcome.
A little bonus to just kind of warm things up. Another benefit of your position as concertmaster is that if there is a piece that's not requiring like a guest soloist, but it has a really great violin part, might be, for example, The Lark Ascending by Vaughan Williams, or maybe even The Four Seasons of Vivaldi. There are any number of them. You get it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And actually, even within the repertoire, there are a number of great concertmaster solos. And when I went and studied at the Concertmaster Academy with Bill Prussell, who's playing, well, I actually brought in a recording of his, so we'll hear later on. He's the concertmaster of the Cleveland Orchestra and one of the finest in the world. So I went to this one-year program called the Concertmaster Academy, and in that, a major thing that we did was go through all the concertmaster solos. So it was a thick book about 40 solos, and these come up, you know, there's actually a nice one coming up at the end of the season in Strauss's Ein Heldenleben, where I'll depict Strauss's shrill wife as she goes through one of her, I don't know how to describe it, tantrums perhaps. But so there's that. That is one of the biggest concertmaster solos. And then, of course, in Scheherazade, the concertmaster plays...
The Young Princess, is it?
Scheherazade herself, mm-hmm, yeah. So the theme will be repeated throughout all the movements and kind of bind them together. It's a really great part to play, as well in some masses, Bach masses, and... there's usually a little something in every concert. So that's one of the, you know, enjoyable parts that the audience gets to experience.
Now, you mentioned Cleveland. And is Bill Prussell in the Cleveland Quartet then in this performance? Is that what we're hearing?
That's right. He's the first violinist for this performance that we'll hear.
And in case you didn't hear another version of the American Quartet earlier this morning, and even if you did, for that matter, I mean, if you have to hear something twice, you could do a lot worse than the American Quartet. I certainly don't feel any sense of suffering at all. This is the second movement from it in a performance featuring, and who would be the other members in the quartet? Do you remember off the top of your head?
Oh, I don't want to mess them up, so.
Okay, so but anyway, this is your mentor, William Prussell, with other members of the Cleveland Quartet, second movement of the American Quartet of Dvorak. as violinist William Prusel with other members of the Cleveland Quartet. He's the mentor of my guest today, Naha Greenholz, and they were playing the second movement of the American Quartet of Antonin Dvorak. We have time for one more short one that you've picked out, Naha, and this is not the first piece that would have come to mind, but although it does have a prominent violin part, and that's this little Salute to Love by Elgar.
That's right. This piece is played by David Nadian, who's one of my absolute favorite violinists, and he's not very well known, but he was concertmaster of the New York Phil when Bernstein was there, and then he actually left that gig to play studio gigs because I guess it was more lucrative, and he also played in Japan for a while, but he has a vibrato to die for and a absolutely gorgeous tone, so I love his playing.
Salute d'amour by Elgar. David Nadian, the name of the soloist there?
Nadian,
with the Salute d'amour by Elgar, as chosen by our guest today, Naha Greenholz, and she played three of the four movements of the Franck Violin Sonata in A with her accompanist, Jeannie Yu, for the midday today, live from our Buck studio. It's been a pleasure meeting you and hearing your music.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure being here.
We'll look for you first on stage there at those concerts of the Madison Symphony to lead the section and the occasional solo, too.